Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, my name is Gary Mansfield, and this is the Ministry of Arts podcast, where each week I'll be speaking to a different artist. Now let's begin by bagging these bongos.
Yeah, right. Crazy.
Hello, 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 and welcome to episode 129 of the Ministry of Arts podcast. I'm recording this on Saturday, the 10th of July, and it's not being released until Monday, the 12th of July. However, on the day in between, you'll be aware that quite an important football match has taken place. So by the time you listen to this podcast, football will have either come home or left home. Let's hope it's the prior, right? But anyway, let's talk about games. Let's talk about art. Firstly, to our Patreon supporters who keep the production of this podcast possible and are helping it to grow. And although this content is free for everyone, if you'd like to support us in a small way, you can do it from as little as £3 a month. If you go over to the Ministry of Arts Instagram page, there's a Linktree drop-down box. Just click on the link there, and that'll take you to our Patreon page. For the price of a cup of coffee once a month, you're getting at least 4 podcasts. And 100% of that donation goes back into supporting this podcast. But anyway, back to this week's episode. I've not previously met today's guest. That sometimes makes it a bit more awkward, you know. But when you start talking to that person and it turns out that they've got a booming personality, it feels like you've known them for years, right? Now, today's guest, L.R. Vandy, has had quite an extraordinary journey into the art world. She's had sell-out solo shows at the October Gallery. She had a public sculpture on show during Frieze Week. She's got a public sculpture on show during the Kensington and Chelsea Art Festival. And the tribal masks that she creates, which have sort of become her signature pieces, are just breathtaking, you know. And on top of all that, she's got such an amazing story, which you're about to hear for yourself. So please, come and join me over Zoom, speaking to L.R. Vandy.
Yeah, that's why I started this podcast. You know, I love speaking to artists about their work.
I can hear that, yeah.
And I know I get a bit enthusiastic sometimes.
What's wrong with that?
Oh, no, nothing. But
because
everyone,
you know what? That's the thing I liked about the people at Kensington and Chelsea Art Week. You know, when I started dealing with them, was their enthusiasm was just like, thank God, they're alive.
Yeah.
The art world can be very stymied, you know.
Oh, it can. The podcast that's out at the moment, I don't know if you wear, is Zach Ove.
It's obviously, there's a long list to get through.
Oh, man, he's amazing, isn't he?
I've known Zach since he was 17. He lived in Camden, and I had a studio in Camden at the time. And we met through a mutual friend. And Hassan Hajjaj, you know Hassan Hajjaj?
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah, Hassan, Zach and me were mates, and the Soul to Soul guys were there.
Nice.
So I was doing a bit of work for them. And I was also doing a bit of work for Hass actually at the time because he had a shop in Covent Garden. So it was all like a little Camden crew, but I didn't grow up there. I grew up in the south of England.
Oh, so whereabouts?
In a place called Selsey near Chichester.
Oh, I know Selsey, yeah.
Yeah.
How come you started off life there?
I was adopted by a white middle class family. Well, I should say lower middle class, actually, because they certainly weren't posh. yeah, that's where we lived. We lived in Hampshire for a bit, and then we lived in Selsey.
Wow.
I was the only darkie in the village.
I was going to say, was there a sort of cultural vacuum in that area?
Yes. When I used to go visit my parents when I was a student, if I got on the bus, they thought I was a nurse.
Brilliant.
You know what I mean? Or if I go out with my mum for lunch, they think I'm a carer. Well, the first black person I saw for real, you know, that wasn't on the telly.
For real.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Not on the telly. It was in Portsmouth with my mum when we were shopping. And I said to my mum rather loudly, am I as black as him?
And what was her answer? Can you remember?
She just laughed. My mum was always very good at just keeping everything quite easy.
Oh, of course.
You know, not making, always letting me know about stuff. So I was adopted, she always let me know.
I was about to say, she probably went through a fair bit herself, didn't she?
Oh my God, during them days. People stop her when I was in the pram and go, is that your child? And my mum would go, yes, and walk on.
Yeah, yeah, there's a lot to say about people who put themselves in that position, isn't there, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. No, I was lucky. We had a great life in Selsey too. Yeah, because it was beach life, fishing and, oh, it's just wonderful. Really outdoor life.
I tell you what, I'm loving your studio. I've got a bit of studio envy coming on, looking behind you.
Oh, good.
It's
very small. Yeah. I'll show it to you. So you come in.
Oh, wow. Ah, that's the scale of the masks. I never knew what scale they were. I've got you now.
They're quite small. They're about 500, these ones. There's some spare ones up there, look.
Brilliant.
That's what I'm working on. And that's a new sculpture I'm working on. See them?
Ah, yeah. Is it a dancer?
She's called Dynamo Woman. I want her to be like about 30 feet high.
Wow.
Yeah.
You can definitely see the movement there.
She's a reminder of the forces of nature.
Yeah, nice.
Because she was inspired by my remembering water spouts from Selsey.
Oh, yeah.
Seen a water spout travelling across the sea.
Yeah. Yeah, they're a bit weird when you see them. You think the world's going to end, don't you?
Precisely. So static. She's like a guardian of the water, really. But should she be let loose? So it's a reminder of our need to look after the planet. That's the next piece that I'd like to get realised. I'm going to make a maquette, a bigger maquette, a 1.5 metre maquette for 154 Somerset House, which you will be at, I hope. 154 Contemporary Art Fair.
When's that on?
October the 11th-ish. It's usually around then at Somerset House.
Oh, yeah.
So I'll be with the October Gallery, my gallery, and there'll be a bigger maquette of her in there.
They're a pretty cool gallery, October Gallery, aren't they?
My God, I just got so lucky, thanks to Zach.
How was it?
Yeah, Zach put me through. Yeah, because he's known them for years, and because of his father, really important filmmaker. So he knew the gallery. I used to go to the gallery when I was in my early 20s. And always was slightly intimidated by it, you know. but after a while, Zach said, I think this would be the gallery for you. You've got to meet them. And he met them with me. So sweet. Really kind, really generous. You know, Zach brings people through with him.
Yeah, yeah. I know you said you've listened to a couple of podcasts. Within the podcast is 7 questions. The first being, Lisa, how would you explain what you do to someone that doesn't know your work?
And like everybody, I really struggle with that and say, go to the October Gallery and look at the website. But it's difficult because I do work through different mediums, often inspired by found objects. I'm slightly obsessed with engineering and mechanical things. I think probably that came from my father, who was a design engineer and was always making, so that I have confidence in that. I also have quite a strong graphic form in my work. And that may well be indeed because I did my first degree in graphics, but I did my second degree in furniture. I did an MA in furniture design at the Royal College as well. So you know, I'm working with, I'm working a lot around transportation and engineering and the female form, I would say.
You said your dad was an engineer.
Yeah.
Did he have a workshop at home?
He had a shed at, well, he had a big garage at home, and he did everything. He fixed everything. He had a lathe, he had a, you know, he had everything. Not milling machine, not that far.
Because
but he could make anything, and he lived in there, basically.
As soon as you said that your dad was an engineer, that explained why you've got a perfect studio wall behind you with all of your tools laid out. That as soon as you said that, I figured that's why. And that is, I commended the wall on your studio. It is perfect.
So it's inspiration stuff.
Excellent.
Yeah. And then but the rest of it is tools, but I try and keep it organised because I learned that from a chef. If you put it back in the right place, you can always find it again.
When was it you first wanted to be an artist? Can you remember?
Well, I think I should have been an artist right from the get-go, but I just did not have the confidence, really. But I could always draw, and I was always good at art, and it was the thing. I went to art school, but I didn't really understand. And in those days, obviously, they wanted you to be... So I'm 62. So between 79 to 82, when I was doing my first degree, they want you to do textiles as a woman.
Oh, wow.
So the only thing I could choose was graphics, because I didn't even know you could be an artist, actually. I didn't even think that existed. Not for someone like me, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So I did my graphics course, and then I started making things. And before I knew it, I was using all the kitchen tools, same old kitchen utensils as tools, you know. They were sort of, and someone said to me, oh, that looks like jewellery. And so I sort of formed it into jewellery and sold lots of jewellery to different people.
Nice.
You know, did different, I mean, I sold to Liberty's and Harvey Nichols and Brown's and places in New York. And then I started, wanted to make bigger things, and I just didn't know enough. So eventually I applied for to do an MA at the Royal College of Art in furniture design, because, not because I wanted to be a furniture designer, but because I knew that I was going to learn a lot about materials and how things fit together. And I also learned all my computer skills there. But of course, as soon as I left the Royal College of Art, I did something completely different. I went off assisting set designers and art directors, and eventually became one myself, because all the skills I'd learned at the RCA had taught me all the technical drawing skills, visualising, how things go together, how to communicate a project, how to approach a project, model making, all that stuff.
It just goes to show how blurred the boundaries are between fine art and anything else creative outside of it.
I think it's about applying what you learn to whatever you're doing, isn't it? But it was really good. I mean, I did some really big jobs. I used to art direct the MTV Awards,
which
was a really big gig. Did those about 4 years in a row. I designed all the Commonwealth Games, where the Queen was seated, or that arena, and the floor cloth, and lots of staging elements for that. I did big gigs, big live music gigs. Did a lot for MTV, and then it just sort of went a bit, to be honest with you. I was working for Blue Peter at that point, art director Blue Peter. I got a call from somebody asking me if I'd like to art direct the Chuckle Brothers. That's when
Did
I gave
up. Did you say
art.
You're having a laugh?
Very good, Gary. Very good. Damn. So that was when I sort of realised that the game was up.
Okay. Wow.
I'm really busy. I didn't have any more jobs. But I just started making things again, you know, and very tentative at first. And I got lots of encouragement from people. Did a show with somebody that we just did on our own, the guy I shared the studio with, Shiraz Beji, who's another very talented artist. And it grew from there. And then Zach put me in touch with the October Gallery, and that was the...
Brilliant.
Yeah, I had a sell-out show, my first show with them at 154 Somerset House. I think I had 10 pieces in the show, and they all sold. It was just like...
Oh, yeah, just underlining.
My feet didn't touch the ground.
Yeah, just underlining your initial thought of, can I be an artist?
Yeah, and I couldn't even say I was an artist. I could never been able to say it.
Brilliant.
Even. It was wonderful and scary and fabulous. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, where are the Chuckle Brothers now?
I've never admitted that to anybody. I can't believe I've now said it to broadcast.
I'm glad you had it.
No, don't. Honesty's the best.
So from that exhibition there, what was it you sold on that first exhibition.
That was all the masterpieces, as you call them. They're boat hulls, and that was all those pieces. I
thought you was on about years ago.
No.
How long ago are you speaking?
18.
Fuck off.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to tell you to fuck off.
No, that's all right.
I thought you meant sort of like a dozen years ago.
No, 4 years ago.
That is brilliant.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, I started at 58 or something.
Oh, I nearly went to clap then.
Actually, I'd started before that. Oh, brilliant. I must have done 3 years before that because I had a body of work that was sort of on its way. So I'd been tinkering probably for 4 years, and then I started getting more and more serious about it. But yeah, it's only 4 years. So it's probably, I would say, 8 years max that I've been making. So and those first 4 years weren't, you know, full on.
Your introduction to the art world was those masks that are boat hulls. Yeah. They are amazing.
Thank you.
Wow, what an introduction. That's sort of like kicking the doors in of the art world to introduce yourself.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
No, they're amazing.
I didn't know how they'd be received. I lost confidence in at one point. I just thought, well, they're just too obvious and too, I don't know. I lost confidence. But anyway, I don't need to think like that now.
Well, bearing in mind this is audio, so for anyone that doesn't know these artworks, could you just explain what they are?
Okay, well, actually, the best way to describe it would be to describe how I first came upon one, actually, because okay. I was in, I love going to antique fairs and car boot sales, and you never know what you're going to find, do you? Yeah. Hairs on the back of men go up. And there was a 900 long model boat hull, but it hadn't been, had no deck and no sails. So it was upside down, laying on its flats, and it was yellow, creamy yellow colour. And I just saw it as a mask.
Yeah, brilliant.
It's got the keel in, it's in fiberglass, it's all lovely, creamy, shiny. My God, that's a mask, I'm having that. Bought it, paid like 30 quid something like that for it. Took it home. I had a little studio in my house, at my flat at the time. And it sat there for 2 years before I suddenly knew exactly what I wanted to do with it. Fishing floats.
Yeah.
So I'm using a lot of fishing floats, a lot of pins, a lot of porcupine quills, things that sort of animate the hull with a sense of danger.
Yeah.
That make it look like an African mask and give you that sense of guardianship. So all these smaller pieces are attached to the hull, sort of creating a barrier to it, but it's also very seductive. They're dangerous, but they're also quite beautiful. So you use the beauty to sort of lure people in. And then after that, you have to start thinking about what you're looking at and what it really means.
Yeah.
And there's been lots of different things said, which I now know whether they're my words or not. You know, people miss. But one of the best comments, it wasn't even a comment, it was a wink. I got four winks from women over 40. Giant vaginas, they saw them.
Brilliant.
So if they look at me, they go like, big wink.
Yeah, I know what you're coming from. And what?
Yeah, vagina dente, you know.
Brilliant. But it's all those sort of things that when you come up with an idea, your subconscious is telling you that there's something there. And yes. it can take us years and years to realise what we was trying to tell ourselves.
Exactly. And I mean, you know, you can do all that sort of post rationalisation and things, but they're instinctive pieces. My job is to make what is already a very beautiful object more beautiful, and not to ruin it and to bring something out of it, but to only use two or three elements.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it becomes decoration. So it's about animating them, giving them real life and real presence. A couple of the pieces were made as a response to lots of the deaths in Italy, of boats turning up with dead migrants. Yeah, because it relates directly back to the African slave trade, directly. Yeah.
And how many of those did you do? 10 originally?
I think there were 10, four quite small ones, about 300 high, and then a few quite big ones, about a metre, 900. And then when I did my solo show, I did ones that were 2 metres high as well.
And the beautiful thing about those, as far as an artist practice is concerned, that could be one of those things that could follow you through your career, that, that you will always bring it, and they're always new. They will never get old.
Yeah.
And it's just a simple idea that has so much power.
Thank you so much. I'm pleased. And I'm so pleased that everyone got it. You know, that was my fear. I didn't know if it was just too obvious or too brash. But I love making them. And, you know, they're very problematic to make. There's nothing zen-like about drilling 2,000 holes in a boat and trying to put, you know, because also when they're wood moves, wood dries, wood cracks, you know, how do you fix them behind? How do you make them rigid and strong enough and well-made enough?
That's the engineering background coming into practice.
I love finding
though,
those solutions.
Yeah.
At
the moment, the Kensington and Chelsea Art Week is on, and you're involved in that. These masks aren't part of the Kensington and Chelsea Art Week.
No, no, they're not. I've got superhero goggles. So I've got, I made 21.
Which is a little bit different from the mask.
It's actually true. But I don't have one of my other sculptures here to show you. But I made 21 sculptures of women that were quite influenced, I'd say, by sort of Bauhaus and Italian futurist.
Yeah.
But they're all white, made in wood, and they've all got different attitudes. There's 21 of them, and I wanted them big in bronze. Yeah, okay, small in bronze would do. So I said, you know, anyone got any money? And I was like, no. Okay, left that behind, you know, move on to the next thing. I've got the sculptures, they're going to be shown somewhere, they're my kids, they're fine.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I thought, I've got all these cogs, I was playing with them, and I was like, oh my God, here comes another one. Superhero
nice.
Problem. And
brilliant.
These women are very static. They're in the marketplace. They're very domestic. They're chattering. They're gossiping. You know, they're making the world go round with buying and selling. Superhero Cogwoman becomes more animated.
Yeah.
She's in industry. She's not domestic now. She's out in the world. She's in Dagenham, Ford Motors.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? She's got six sisters there, Gary, that haven't been allowed to be made. Because, you know, a cog needs another cog to work against.
Yeah, brilliant, brilliant, so love
it. I've only been afforded to make one, but her sisters need to join her at some point, her six sisters. She's made from six components because they're all made in slices in moulds. Switch the components around, I can get six more figures out.
Excellent.
And they're all different,
yeah,
but they all work together. So Superhero Cogwoman came out of that because she's about to fly off and do good deeds, you know.
I can imagine.
She's just about to go. She's a good one. She's come out of the industry and she just wants to do good things.
And that was displayed in Frieze Week the other year, wasn't it?
Absolutely. And that was my luck because I'll tell you what happened really. That I had my solo show coming up. I'd come up with Superhero Cogwoman. I'd got a little 3D print of her made. And I said, anyone got any money again? And they went, no. And so I thought, sod it, I just got a pension through.
Got ya.
14 grand, I didn't even know I had it.
Perfect.
Paid for her. I said, I'm going to just put all my money into it, I'm going to do it, I don't care. And I did it. And because I did it, and it was available, it went into my show,
there
and then
go.
On to Frieze.
Lesson learned.
Absolutely. Put your heart into it. But it sort of seems to me you've got to be rich to be a sculptor.
And
also, that I mean, I was asked the other day by somebody if I wanted to have three Superhero Cogwoman for a project. But they didn't have any money.
Yeah.
I don't have three times 15 grand or 40 grand to give you.
And it'd be ideal if you could, but yeah. Could you imagine how fast you can grow, or an artist can grow, if they have got that in their back pocket? That's why the art world has always been white, middle class.
Thank you.
Looked after people and people like us have to struggle.
I have faith in these things. And what I do also realise is that with a lot of work, and I'm sure this is true for absolutely everyone, is that you may be on it now, but it's going to take 3-4 years, maybe 5 years before everyone catches up with you. And, you know, and by then, like, I'm onto Dynamo Woman now.
Yeah. Mind you, you've not got any cobwebs on you, that's for sure. So how far you've come in the art world in such a relatively small time.
I mean, I must say, this public art thing has really come into its own at the moment, post-COVID, you know, during COVID and post-COVID, I think that will continue. The importance of art and people recognising how much they do need it and want it.
Yeah,
and want
I agree.
To see it and want the conversations. Superhero Cogman is sitting right outside where people park the car and then go towards the opera at Kensington.
Yeah, nice.
I was thinking, I don't think they're going to like her. But I don't care.
No,
you know, other than the whole piece is obviously is to make abstract sculptures of women, to me, seems important.
Yeah.
You know, great, it's okay, you have a bronze of Margaret Thatcher or something with a, you know, or whoever, you know, whoever they're celebrating. I think more powerful that we have abstract figures of women.
Yeah.
Because then we can bring our conversations to it. You know, it opens up conversation rather than, I think those things tend to just be replicas. They're dead to me, those things.
Yeah, you can definitely see the African in the superhero Cogwoman.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Wait till you see these women as well. Check them out on the October Gallery website. You'll see that there's a couple of them that got nice, what modelled on me, you know, big ass.
they're going to grow with you, I'm sure.
Well, I hope so. That's a body of work. These women, those 21 pieces, I'm still really proud of them. Really, I mean, I'm proud of all my work, actually, but I don't know how I did it. It was like Groundhog Day for a year.
Yeah,
because you're cutting wood, you're painting it, you're sanding it, you're filling it, you're cutting wood, you're painting it, you're sanding it.
It's not an artwork, is it? It's just material, isn't it?
You said it. You're sanding and painting, sanding and painting, sanding. I didn't even know if I'd finished what I'd finished.
Yeah, at the end, you go, I don't care. Just take it.
Please. Hanging up everywhere.
Get someone else to talk positive about my work because I've had it up to here with it.
You know the thing.
Lisa, what artwork that you've created has got the strongest emotional connection, do you think?
I think Dynamo Woman, the one that I'm it's always the piece you're working on latest.
Yeah.
I think, because I think she's more important than what I feel about her. I think the connection that other people are going to make to her, I think she has something important to say about the planet. Ties into that, ties into female energy. She's a reminder of the forces of nature.
I mean, Dynamo Woman at the moment is just a maquette, and you showed me earlier. Could you just describe what Dynamo Woman is?
She was very influenced, inspired by tornadoes and cyclones and water spouts. So she starts as a small spiral and gets wider. That's her arse. smaller, that's her waist, a bit bigger again, that's her breast, and then the head, and then it whizzes up. Mm. So it's made out of, the ones I make at the moment have been out of flat copper. It's only about 6 mil wide.
Yeah.
And, or I've been making them in aluminium wire as well.
And is it just one coil or several?
I have a copper one, which is one coil, which is fantastic.
Wow. Sounds amazing.
That one's come out really well. But the other ones have a core of a spiral and then they're added to afterwards. I mean, they're going to be tricky to make and no one wants a sculpture that moves, that's for sure. I think that would be highly illegal in these days. But the idea is that these figures are getting more and more animated, more and more dynamic.
Yeah.
And hopefully bigger and bigger.
And will you have to consider the base that they're on as well?
I think that one for me just wants to go straight into the ground.
Nice.
By the sea.
Yeah.
On the beach, on a harbour, you know?
Yeah, right. Brilliant. Yeah, here I am, back in Selsey.
Mm.
What do you do to relax, Lisa?
This is it. I'm not very relaxed when I'm not doing.
It's hard sometimes, isn't it? Because I think it's because a creative mind is always creating.
Yeah, you can't switch it off. And some people say, well, how long did that take to make? And I can say, well, probably 40 years, you know, because you... You're always thinking about stuff, and I'm so happy in my studio. You know, I've got very, very basic tools, but you can make a lot. You can do a lot with your hands, you know. These things are amazing.
If there was you and five other artists, Lisa, past and present, what would your ideal group show be?
Oh, my God. I have to have the heavyweights in. I mean, I suppose I would think about artists that have really excited me and influenced me, I guess.
Yeah.
Mostly dead, I think. But apart from... So, I'd have to say Barbara Hepworth.
Perfect.
For sure. I'd have to say Brancusi.
Nice.
For sure. One of my earliest sort of like wow moments. Yeah. Laszlo Mahony-Nagy is to me one of the most exciting
people.
Laszlo Mahony-Nagy. So Mahony-Nagy, Mahony-Nagy.
Okay.
Was a professor at the Bauhaus. Okay. So, you know, 30s to 40, I think he died in like the 40s, I think. Was a really truly experimental artist with all the sort of elements that I love. So engineering, photography, light, nice. Kinetic sculpture. Nothing was off bounds to him. I think he was a true modernist. And go on, like, I mean, I think he invented the photogram, actually. His photogram. I think, I don't think he gave it the name, but early days, he was doing the most sensitive and beautiful photograms. And then his kinetic sculptures are just, and then of course all that stuff around him at the Bauhaus is Oskar Schlemmer. But I don't think I can include him because his costumes for opera were just incredible. And then who else would I go for? So who have I got? I've got Babs Hepworth. I've got Brancusi. I've got Mahony-Nagy. Then I guess I'd go Theaster Gates, I think. Because I think I'd learned a lot from the way he works, and especially the way he works with his community, let alone the standalone pieces that he makes.
That's another name I don't know.
Theaster Gates, yeah, check him out. Very, very important Black American artist. He's showed here a couple of times at the White Cube. He's worked out of his own cities and made good.
Doesn't make a film, does he?
He does everything, I think, really. He does, you know, performance art. But he will. He's been making art for the community, basically, in buildings that have been disused, old banks.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's Detroit he's working out of. So industrial centres that have lost their core and their heart, he's taken these buildings and re-erecting them as art galleries or as art places for people to come and make art. So he's got a very wide attitude to art that includes many other people and many other performers and artists as well, very inclusive. Very interesting guy. And then I suppose I want to say Basquiat because he had a huge influence on me, but I think Louis Bourgeois would be probably more interesting. Basquiat was a bit stoned, wasn't he?
You can have six.
Okay, Louis Bourgeois, because I find her work really unsettling and hard.
Yeah.
I'm not drawn to it for its beauty as you are. I find it deeply disturbing and challenging.
Yeah.
And yet I'm very drawn to it. And it's so the opposite of how I work and what I do. And she was amazing. And it is daunting, her work, and it is slightly terrifying. I think she really challenges you.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that's a good thing.
Definitely. And Basquiat?
Basquiat, because I think, I don't paint, but I think because of the highly sort of symbolic language in his work. And when I used to make jewellery, and I didn't know it was jewellery. I thought it was art, but someone said it was jewellery, so I made it into jewellery. I was always using symbols that we're very familiar with, you know, like the symbol for water. We all know that way, what it means. Circles, bars, you know, restriction. A lot of sort of... symbols are an international language, basically. When I did some art education with some of that work, I encouraged other people with different cultures to bring out different symbols and what they meant to them, because it's a way of describing and showing something without words. It's perfect. And looking at Basquiat's work, it's full of language and symbols that you can decipher very easily. I mean, they're all muddled up, but they're so powerful. And if you don't know what they mean, you're really missing out. It's so rich. It's like, you know, it's like reading a book going up to that work, isn't it?
The superhero cogwoman that we were speaking about just a little while ago, that's part of the Kensington and Chelsea Art Week. For the next couple of weeks throughout July and August, people can see it for themselves. Whereabouts is it?
It's in Napoleon Gardens.
Nice.
Which is very close to the Abbotsbury Road entrance, and you just walk up through the car park and she's in Napoleon Garden, which is beautiful. I mean, it's Holland Park is beautiful, full stop, isn't it? I mean, I hadn't been for probably 20 years. I'd forgotten how beautiful it is. And she's in a walled garden, and there's a little turret at the top behind where the peacock hangs out sometimes.
Nice.
I'm hoping that peacock's going to go and sit on her head, but not shit, obviously. And it's just it's a nice part to go to anywhere, whatever you're looking at, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm thrilled she's there. Absolutely thrilled she's there. She needs an outing, you know, every so often.
And is there any context alongside it? Or is it just nice?
No, and the garden's not been planted yet, which is
nice.
Funny. So she's got bare earth, but I think I might be planting this week. So then the flowers will all come around.
Yeah.
So she really is in very different surroundings. Well, she was in Regent's Park before, but I rather like her in the countryside. I rather like that juxtaposition.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm.
What have you got coming up, Lisa?
154 Contemporary Art Fair is coming up in October, and I'm just about to start making 6 or 7 pieces for that, and to make a 1 to 2 metre high maquette of Dynamo Woman to try and get some traction on her.
And where are you going to try and get the traction on her?
Basically, just being seen is one thing.
Yeah.
I've made a catalogue of her. I just want to show you this, the copper one, Gary, because
nice.
I photoshopped these. The idea that she
looks good in situ, doesn't it?
Can you see? Can you see her?
Ah, yeah. Nice.
And there's a good copper one I want to show you. There she is.
They look so good. I know that you said the inspiration come from at Selsey as a child.
Yeah.
And you know, seeing them out at sea, but they look perfect. They
Thank
look
so
perfect
much.
In that environment.
So I think just getting them seen, I'll probably try and get that one made big. I find it's a bit like when I used to be an art director, production designer. If more than one person in the office knows your name, you get the gig.
Yeah.
And it's a bit like repetition.
Yeah.
And so it sinks into the psyche, and then eventually, it won't be immediate. No one's going to go, God, great. I've got loads of money for you, off you go. But it will slowly sink into the psyche, and something will happen eventually. But things have got to be seen.
Yeah. Well, the public art arena isn't that enormous, you know, it's
because people can't afford it, Gary.
Yeah, exactly. But to see a good bit of public sculpture, I was talking about this just a couple of hours ago. I walked through Liverpool Street into the city about 18 months ago. I was going to give a talk at some posh place, just, you know, because they love bringing a poor person in, don't they? Telling about their fucking experiences. But walking through there, the artwork in these big environments is bullshit. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
I mean, no disrespect to the artists that have made it, but it's what the people that have bought it think that it says about them.
I mean, some of it feels incredibly dated, and I wonder if, you know, often during the process of architecture, it can take a decade for something to actually be finished from the concept. And some of these things, I think, look just incredibly dated.
Yeah.
And I wonder also with public art if it shouldn't have a lifespan.
Yeah.
Actually.
Yeah.
Well, the
full plinth is only there for a short while, isn't it, you know?
Such a good idea. I think a lot of public art should have a short life.
Yeah.
5 years, gone. That's enough. I mean, the bad news is, of course, for the artists, is then there's storage.
Exactly that. Well, that's what Zach mentioned, what I was talking about at the start. He was saying that there should be more protest art in the world, and it's them artists that sort of appeal to me. And it doesn't matter how big or small the artist is, if they're passionate about a subject and know how to make that idea and argument into a visual form, then that's beautiful. And that's what I'm looking to see, how and where we could possibly do a fourth plinth type thing, you know, every couple of years, get an artist to make something in protest about, and it doesn't have to be a huge issue about refugees or, you know, race or gender. It can be just something about local shops or anything that someone's passionate about, you know.
Yeah. Well, you'll always find, I think, that the smaller, the micro, you know, does reflect what's going on in the bigger world anyway.
Yeah, so however definitely.
Small that protest may seem, it could be part of the bigger picture anyway. But I like to think of some of my work as protest work, actually. You know what I mean? It's I'm quite angry, you know.
Yeah, and it's hard to quell that anger into something that doesn't look angry.
Yeah,
you've got exactly something right. That's got to tell you, got to make something that tells the story of anger.
Do you think it's just important to have something political to say? I'm not saying all artists have to do that. For me, I think it's a very indulgent thing to be an artist.
Yeah,
I'm lucky that I had some career beforehand that gave me some savings to do a bit, although God knows it ain't easy. But it just feels that I'm not going to sit here and not have something to say about the world. I'm not going to not respond to what's going on around me. You know, that would just be like, I might as well just dig a hole and get in it. What's the point?
No, I agree. I totally agree.
What I have enjoyed listening to about the podcast is that you seem to generate that something else comes out of the podcast often. A show or connecting people that then make a show, or you making that piece of art.
Yeah, well, that was an intention
putting people
from
together.
The off.
It's I love that.
It's just it's just growing. It's you know, it's, we're not in this art world for long, or we're not in the world for long. You know, so try and grow and prosper for as much as possible.
Yeah. And,
you know,
and also to connect with people.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. Like I say, that thing that Zach said, that's been burning away at me for ages, because it was only like 2 weeks ago that I had the meeting with Zach, I think, and I put his up a bit lively. But he's quite an inspirational guy, isn't he?
He's a force of nature. I mean, he has Get Up, Stand Up, the show that Zach curated for, is a landmark show that he will go down in history for forever. It was how he did it, I don't know. How he pulled it together so quickly, I don't know.
It's as if you expect him to come to life and start marching down the road, don't you, you know?
It's magic, is absolutely magic, that show.
And he was talking about how some artworks, they're almost loud in their silence, you know. They're generating something quite massive, and it was beautiful.
Oh, are you talking? You're talking about the 40 men sculptures. No, I'm talking about Get Up, Stand Up, the group show that he did at Somerset House.
Sorry, I was talking about the ones outside.
Yeah, they're fantastic, absolutely amazing. I mean, thought provoking beyond and. Some of them went out to the States as well, of course, and became very wrapped up in Black Lives Matter, because their hands are up.
Again.
They showed their palms.
And how cool is that?
Show your palms. That's not aggressive.
How cool. And it's amazing when stuff like that comes around, doesn't it? Mm. It's absolutely beautiful.
His piece outside of the Design Museum, Autonomous Morris, I think is probably one of the best pieces he's ever made, actually, because it's so complete and so clever to have seen that in a few car boots. You know, they're car bonnets from Morris Minors.
Yeah, that's
and
what,
to have seen it, to bring it together like that, you can't draw that kind of thing.
Yeah, I went
you
down
just have to do it.
I went down to MDM Props where he was. That's where we recorded. It was at MDM Props.
Isn't it great?
It's beautiful. It is stunning.
I love going. Yeah, I love a football pitch.
Yeah, and I've wanted to do one with them a while ago. I did contact them and nothing come of it. But then now, obviously, going to see Zach, then, the intro is made there. But, just going to see everything that's going on there, you know.
I went there once and Zach had a piece. They also were making this, all the animals from a zoo in Dubai, and I'm talking about all the animals, so from a mouse to a horse, all realistic. And then in another corner, they had a massive ice room, which was like four times the size of my studio, in ice for a Russian princess, not a princess, sorry, but a Russian oligarch that wanted to have an ice room in his mansion.
Brilliant, as you do.
I mean, the variety of what they do is incredible, and the size, the scale of the place, incredible. Brilliant, it's a football pitch, isn't it?
Yeah,
like a football pitch. That's worth a visit, that place.
Where can people see you, Lisa? Be it online, social media,
I don't have a website because all my work's on the October Gallery website. I mean, I suppose what I could do is put on my Instagram tag, I could put www.octobergallery.
You've got that anyway.
Is it? Oh, well, there we go then.
The link on your Instagram profile is October Gallery and it takes you straight there.
Oh, right, okay, great. You can see how pathetic I am. I'm quite good at making things, though.
That's what you're there for. Everything else is just decoration, isn't it?
It's really mad, though, because I can do technical drawing. I can do 3D technical drawing. I can really, you know, realise a technical drawing properly. But when it comes to being on the phone and doing those things, I'm just, I think I lose interest.
Yeah.
So I mean, I was going to say that actually about the work, because I think one of your questions that you ask other people is about how the ideas come. I think you were asking somebody once.
Yeah.
What inspires or something. And I was thinking, actually, I think the majority of my work comes from mistakes. You know, sometimes it just clicks like the first hole. But a lot of the other work has come because I've been trying things that didn't work, and that's given me two other ideas. So then I'll resolve the thing I'm on, and I'll come to those other ideas later. So the work generates work.
That's the story of so many artists. And it's because
that's why you've got to do it. There's no point just thinking about it. That's why you've really got to get on and do it.
Because none of them are mistakes.
So much more will come from it.
There's some artists that think it's quite fraudulent if they just come across something rather than work towards it. And I was like,
torture yourself. You've been working towards it all your bloody life. Like, you know, it's here. It's been here forever. Back of the head. The idea being that in the making comes the mistakes, comes the errors, comes the energy. And in the mistakes come 10 more ideas that you can then latch on to later. But I have to actually be here in the studio making for that to actually happen. It doesn't happen at the screen so much, you know. The drawing is good. That's great for me, but I have to be actually doing to make ideas flow. And something between the relationship between the brain and the hands for me, it's when I suppose I feel I'm most complete or when I'm most relaxed when it's going well, obviously.
And do you think that goes back to the childhood of growing up seeing your dad
seeing
in his workshop?
I think you're probably right. And my brother was a farmer and a great maker. I mean, he can make anything from a chair to a house. You know, he's... they did everything. If something needed doing, they did it. You didn't get people in.
Yeah.
You know, they did all the maintenance, whether it was roof. I came home once and a wall had come down. My dad had decided to take the wall out in the house.
As you
propped
do.
It all up, and next thing you know, we had a nice 70s arch.
I hope that was in the 70s and not the 90s.
Yes, it was.
So 70s arches are all right in the 70s, aren't they?
But it's sort of, I think, seeing that done around me all the time gave me a lot of confidence.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It makes you realise that anything's possible if you have a go, isn't it?
Exactly. And to know that, you know, my father was actually happier. So you could see that when he was making, probably did transfer to me.
Yeah.
All my fathers and my brother, because my brother's 8 years older than me, one of my brothers, was that things were done. Things got done and they got finished properly. Yeah. And no project seemed to go on forever, you know, like you hear. But no, they were very, very efficient.
That's a good quality to have, isn't it?
Doers. My dad would have a really, really good way, and I realised how it did, of just being able to make from whatever was around.
Yeah.
Try not to go out and buy too much stuff, just being resourceful with what you've got and making it look good and professional, you know.
Yeah, there's something about a well-made something that is produced from nothing. I really admire that.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Me too. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's resourceful, it's skillful, and it is upcycling and it is recycling, isn't it? I mean, I feel these model boat hulls that I make, is that upcycling?
Right.
What really does make me laugh about those boat hulls is that I've just got this image of, you know, white man in cardigan with small boy in same cardigan but smaller, looking over their model boats in the 50s.
Yeah, yeah.
Help him, it's made, and they take it down. And now I've got them.
Exactly, yeah.
I love it, you know, because they are back from the 60s, 70s, 50s, and earlier, some of them. I wouldn't be allowed to join the yacht club. I wasn't allowed to join the tennis club where I lived, you know, because of my colour. So the irony of all this is not lost on me, and definitely very satisfying.
Yeah.
That. I mean, my solo show was called Hidden. That was 3 years ago now, I think, at the October Gallery. And the whole thing about the hulls, of course, is it is, I'm showing you the side that you never see.
Yeah.
You know, unless it's in dry dock, you're never going to see that part of the boat. It is hidden and it is
barnacle free.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think a lot of the subjects I'm talking about are trying to make visible the hidden. Similarly with the railway track and these women and the idea of women in industry, trying to make this these abstract forms visible to provoke those kind of thoughts about what's not seen.
Well, that's the ideal piece of art, isn't it? Where you show the viewer something that they know and let them read it in a different context.
Yeah.
And yeah, that for
quite
me,
interesting. Quite interesting. Yeah,
to see. For me, is the ideal piece of. Well, that's the basis of conceptual art, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Of course it is. Of course it is. Also, I made this film actually that hasn't had any traction. Where I was making bread, and I'd been to Ireland recently, and they said add treacle to your soda bread because it gives it a really nice little sweet flavour. So I was making it and I poured the treacle in. Oh my God, if you pour treacle onto flour and watch what happens, it's sensational.
Is it chemical, a chemical reaction?
It's terrifying. It's like the earth has been subsumed. Then that flour just rolls right over it and takes over and goes white again. So I made a little film. We filmed it on 4K, I think we did it. I made a great big tray, step ladder, because I did it on my iPhone with a like angle poised light and sellotape. And filmed it, and it was so amazing. Then we did it big scale, and I showed it in my solo show. I wish I could get that scene, because this is one of those fabulous things where a piece of work has come out of the domestic.
Yeah.
And that really ties into these women. Because they're very much about a domestic scene and these wonderful surprises that you get in your domestic lives, whether it's reflections. I've got a whole body of work about reflections, which are just from vases and mirrors in the house and the sun shining a certain way. And you get,
it's
happening. I'm going to put them on Instagram at some point. But those, I think, getting joy from very small happenings is, I think,
it's beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah. And I know lots of people do it, but they don't spend enough time with it.
Well, is that, again, it's just going back to seeing something that you'd normally just look over.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I was talking to an artist yesterday on that same subject, but I'm going to bring an extra human into the mix. I was speaking to an artist yesterday who just paints homeless people. And he's a great painter, James Early.
Yeah.
I've known him for some time. Just to see these beautiful faces that are telling such a story, you know what I mean? And he puts them on display at eye level when most people would just walk past the guy on the floor and not see them, you know.
And then made into art. Everyone's
and that is beautiful. Point. It's that Gavin Turk thing of making something that's deemed worthless and putting great value to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really admire that.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
And that's similar to what when I see artists using materials like you're using there. It's, you know, the hull of the boat is the bit we don't see. It's the throwaway bit we don't acknowledge. We like all the pretty stuff that's based on the minute.
Gone.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's about 2 seconds to strip that off. Well, it kills me to do it though, because the workmanship in these things is incredible. Yeah. It really breaks my heart to do it, but has to be done. I keep a lot of that stuff, actually.
Do you?
Yeah, you have to. Someone's made it. Mm.
Yeah. Is your studio there? Is that closed off?
I share it with this guy, Shiraz. So I cut it down the length, which is a much better way of doing it. I see some people have done it in halves. You've got to go through one studio to get to the other.
Yeah.
But he's not often in. He comes in for making periods. He uses it mostly as storage and he travels quite a bit. So
hi, Sandy.
And he hasn't been in for a couple of weeks. And I'm really, you know, nothing against him. He's a great guy, but I really love it on my own. But I often come in very early.
Yeah.
So I could come in at 7 or something. So I know that I've got at least 4 hours to myself.
Yeah.
And I'll do another 4 hours with him here, and then I'll go and then I, you know, try and work around it.
Yeah.
I'm lucky to have a studio.
Yeah.
Jeez. Well, you know, we chat and it's often really helpful, especially in these times.
Yeah, well, I've got a friend who we speak probably every other day, and it's always about art. And every idea that I've had is more or less a collaboration with him, because there's nothing that I've made that I haven't run past him.
Yeah.
And I don't see it as being his artwork, even if his idea was the major part of it.
Because but he wouldn't have had the idea if he hadn't heard it. No, I mean, if you did that, you wouldn't be making anything, because we're all influenced by everything.
Exactly. Right, Lisa, that's all my questions asked.
All right, we're done. And I'm thrilled that you wanted to do it. I'm touched and thrilled. It's great.
I am so, I'm pretty much, I don't use this word, I don't think I've ever used this word, but I'm aghast that you're only sort of like 4 or 5 years into your visual art life, and you're at the stage you are. It's commendable. It really is.
I'm a grafter.
I can't wait to see what you're up to in another 5 years.
Oh, that's very thrilling and exciting. Yeah, no, I mean, I come in the studio every day. You know, it's a 9-to-5 job. That's how I see it.
Brilliant. Right, Lisa, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Gary. It's been an absolute pleasure.
I've loved it.
Thank you. Oh, by the way, Maggie Hambling, what a great show. That was great.
Thank you.
She's terrifying.
Have you met her?
I've met other friends that have met her, and I've been warned away, you know. That was a really good show. I really enjoyed it. Now, I'm looking forward to this. There's so many to listen to. I'm very looking forward to catching up on many more.
Right, Lisa, I'm going to shoot off, darling. And I'll see you. Well, I'm hoping to meet up with you soon.
You're very welcome to come to my studio at any time or meet up anyhow. And I'm interested in any of the charity things you're doing, perhaps to donate to a piece of work at some point.
Brilliant. I'll bear that in mind. Lisa, you're a darling. Right. I'll see you soon.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
There you go. Lisa Vandy. What a series of accomplishments in such a small journey. Superb. And as she mentioned there, her superhero Cogwoman is on show at the Napoleon Garden for the duration of the Kensington and Chelsea Art Festival, which runs until the 31st of August. So for more information on Lisa's work, and that of so many other artists involved, go over to www.kcaw.co.uk. to discover where you'll find these artists and their work, and just how much this festival is producing for the local communities. It really is quite inspiring. And so many of the artists involved have been previous guests on the Ministry of Arts podcast. You've got last week's guest, Amy Jackson, Zach Ove, Graphic Rewilding, Orlando Broom, Fiona Grady. There's Lauren Baker way back on episode 41. I can't even think whoever else. So if I've missed anyone, I do apologise. In this episode, Lisa Vandy spoke of the October Gallery and how it was instrumental getting her to the position she is in the art world today in such a short time. Now let me just read you a few little snippets about the October Gallery. It was founded in 1979 and is now a charitable trust. And it has been instrumental in bringing to the worldwide attention many of the world's leading international artists. The gallery promotes the trans-vanguard, the very best contemporary art from around the planet, as well as maintaining a cultural hub in central London for poets, writers, intellectuals and artists. It hosts talks, performances and seminars. And to find out more, go over to www.octobergallery.co.uk. It's a gallery that I'm definitely going to take active measures to have them appear on this podcast. So, that's about it. Lisa Vandy, superhero Cogwoman, Napoleon Gardens, part of Kensington and Chelsea Art Festival. Got to be done. That's it from me. Until next week, toodle pip. Well, hope you enjoyed that episode of the Ministry of Arts podcast. If you're unable to support us on Patreon, leaving a review on whichever platform you listen to this podcast really does help us get noticed and anyone else looking for an art podcast, or even giving us a positive shout out on your social media. Anything is appreciated, but either way, thanks for listening, and until next week, ta-da.
even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.